Hi, welcome to the Illusion of More podcast. I'm David Newhoff. I don't think it's a coincidence that we are currently wrestling with the existential questions posed by big data, while at the same time consider the social implications of rulings by the Supreme Court in both Citizens United and in the Hobby Lobby case. In fact, I believe we have an unprecedented mandate at this point in history to more rigorously consider the distinction between human beings and their inventions. The nature of existence itself is changing as we atomize experience into data that is bought and sold as a new commodity. At the same time, many of us in the U.S. are concerned about the precedents set when corporate entities appeared to be endowed with the same rights as living beings. In this podcast, I talk with Jennifer Lynn Marone, who is in the startup phase of bringing to market Jennifer Lynn Marone Incorporated. An American artist who has lived in Europe for more than a decade, Marone has chosen to address these social, economic, and existential questions with a venture that is part experiment, part cultural statement, and part business. By incorporating herself, Jennifer Lynn Marone will now be the CEO of Jennifer Lynn Marone, Inc. And that means literally treating her life, her experiences, her knowledge, even her biological data, as a set of assets to be fully managed and monetized at the discretion of the corporation. I spoke to Jennifer via Skype at her home in London. Tell me where this began, the notion of incorporating and I believe trademarking yourself, where this came from.
Well, it's not just trademarking, it's all intellectual property. So even, you know, anything I produce, copyrighted. So the idea came from, well, over the summer, we had to write our dissertations, and I was looking at kind of the progression of technology and its relationship to humans, and kind of began to distill this all down to progression towards efficiency and what that means for humans right. and our interactions and the economy and politics, and kind of all becomes this big ball. And we had to start the year with a project, and it was to design a protest. And I had, you know, being American, I saw a lot of inequalities and injustices, and the conclusions I kind of came to with my dissertation was the, you know, is technology or technological progression driving us into some abyss, or where is it taking us? Is it taking us farther than maybe we deserve to, our potential has as humans to go? And I felt like there was also increasingly less opportunity for, you know, the bleaker outlook for jobs, like you say in your last post. So in a way, too, I felt like I couldn't protest against something that was constantly in a continual revolution. Like, we never finished the Industrial Revolution. We've just continued in it. So everything is about constant change. And so rather than protest against that, you can't revolt against a revolution, I guess. And so I said, okay, well, I have to go within the system and see if there's possibility to change or to expose or to shift perception or provoke by kind of subverting or disrupt, as you know, I didn't want to use that word. So it started as a form of protest.
And so what, well, I mean, that does lead to one of the questions, you know, I want to ask, which is whether or not, you know, Jennifer Lynn Marone, Inc., is a business or is it a statement?
Well, it is both. Mm-hmm. And I think I've only kind of just begun to, I'm just at the tip of the iceberg. I think there is going to be a lot more opportunities for making statements by actually conducting, you know, my life as a business, and it's dealing about ownership of you know, information, ideas, processes, strategies, so the intellectual property, which I feel is very different. There's just a lot of hypocrisy or it's not the same rights for individuals as it is for corporations, and inequality of treatment, particularly within the U.S. for citizens versus companies. And so the statement, it was very timely. Like I didn't know what was happening with Hobby Lobby, to be honest. And this all came from just basically researching how corporations are organized and structured and run, how they are in the eyes of the law, and you know, the tax benefits, corporate veils, how money gets shifted around, and then how you know, the people have become basically consumers and statistics, and that's how we're even referred to more often than just people. And corporations started as something to be for the public good, but because they now have perpetual existence, and you know, with shareholders, the need to gain profit and as much as possible for the shareholders, I think kind of steers the goals away. Mm-hmm. And the statement of also that what are the values of things?
Right. Well, it seems to me that you're that what you're dealing with, what we're dealing with, but you're sort of trying to embody it literally.
Yeah.
Is sort of two questions. One is privacy that we have yet to sort out. Is to really reconcile how much data is being gathered, what's being done with it, how it could theoretically be used poorly or not in the future, which is certainly one question. And then the other is deriving value from that data. Mm-hmm. What you're essentially, I mean, and they are two distinct issues. Like,
yes. You know,
I don't want somebody spying on my emails, for example.
No.
Just as a matter of principle, which is why I don't use Google, Gmail.
Yeah.
And but that's a separate issue from whether or not, as you're saying, information that could be assumed about me or known about me has actual monetary value. And we know it does because there are data brokers out there trading in trading in these data as commodities. So give me some idea of what you envision sort of do you hope to sort of address both of those issues separately together? Do you yet know, you know, what it is, you know, kind of what role you'd like to play in that larger dialogue?
There's kind of like two parts to every single portion of this project. And that is exactly what I'm addressing, trying to do both. So one, to look at like the business aspects. So who's buying the information? What are the combinations that are valuable? How is it gotten, basically, or where does it come from? And yeah, to say, well, you know, maybe there is something in this. I don't see this going away. I only see it increasing, like the way information will be, you know, taken from us. We're going into an increasingly sensing world. And where do the values lie, and to what end goal, basically, and how, you know, and a lot of the research that I did, every piece of information could have a monetary value, considered a record, not even just a set of information that becomes even more valuable. And they don't lose value the more that they're sold. So it's it's like a product on a shelf. Each one has the same exact price, and it, you know, every time it's sold for that price. And I kind of want, I'm questioning whether data could become a currency on one end.
Well, certainly it's become a commodity.
It's definitely become a commodity, but could this be in the prospect of jobs decreasing and more financial instability for the common man? Could this be some kind of supplement or way to decrease cost of living? And then on the flip side, what are we, how is it detrimental to our individual lives as well?
Right.
It's a duality where we want to know, or it's like very much about individuality. And that's why we, as humans, I guess, like we want to know more about ourselves or understand ourselves. And it's kind of, I see the economy like kind of needs to keep growing. And it needs us to want, to have this need for feeding the sense of self. Whereas companies are getting the information, it's being used to, okay, how do we keep feeding that sense of self? How do we make people buy more things? Or, I mean, there's also health. How do we make people healthier? How do we make them cure? But it's all ultimately run on like economic growth, in my opinion. I don't know if that answered your question.
Well, it did, and raised or sort of you raised several that I'm not even sure which to ask in which order. But before I get to any of them, though, I wanted to just clarify your part of your plan. Next is to are you effectively kind of hooking yourself up to sensors and tracking a lot of data, biometric data, whatever, kind of in real time, 24/7. Is that the goal?
Yes.
Tell me a bit about how that is supposed to work, anyway.
Well, I have a device that I made with a few other people, and so this is, you know, with electrocardiogram. So for heart rate, emotional sensor. It's called. There's either a Galvin skin response or another one, EDA, and then physical. So I didn't use things like Fitbit and Jawbone, you know, these commercially available things, because I wanted it to go directly to my database and in real time. And then I have a little camera that takes photos, like a life logger would. And then, you know, my phone tracks me. Everything is basically being set up so that it just immediately sends a copy, or it sends the information to my server, which would be displayed on the part of the tracking website. And this is to for a few reasons. One is to kind of mock or mimic, ape a bit how the NSA, it sounds like they're viewing our information, which is in real time. It's also to say that data is most valuable as a compilation and in real time. The most valuable is the most recent. And then as a company, to also start determining, like, see, you know, the combinations and actions and occurrences, instances that happen, and how they affect. So I even have like cameras in my room on me, so a form of surveillance, security. So, and yeah, what I screen grab, so every 3 minutes takes a screenshot of what I'm doing, even spy software, so keyloggers and things like that, and just trying to see all the information together. And this, even as a design challenge, is quite difficult. But then, like, I'm doing that, and I'm making it public. I will be making it public. That's more of a statement.
Yep.
To say, like I said in the video, that that's how, well, we don't know how much is seen, It's also making a statement of we're so concerned about our privacy, but it's quite probably really boring. I don't know how much as a company, like, do I see this then as a revenue stream, and how will that change my behavior? How will it become maybe a form of entertainment? And then there's also more of like the philosophical side of, given that you're watching my actions and my behaviors, and but I'm also a product, and so whatever you see me doing could be something that somebody's asked me to do, and then what kind of ethical or moral boundaries are maybe crossed, or, you know, somebody does ask me to do something, everybody else will know about it if it's something that is a bit controversial or crossing boundaries. And it's to make people think about what we do and what happens when the spectator becomes part of the play, basically.
Right.
When it's not just purely watching something happen and unfold before your eyes, but you know that you're directly involved in it. And does that maybe change our engagement and our values and our virtues? Does it make it worse? So it's a bit of using myself as a guinea pig.
Yep.
To test these concerns.
Are you apprehensive at all about doing this? You got to be a little bit.
Yes, I am a little bit. Not quite. Sometimes I say, what did I get myself involved in?
Right. Good idea. Wish I had picked somebody else.
No, but it's also, you know, testing one's own limits. Mm. And I'm a bit excited to get, you know, to get it all running and started. But it's also, I'm very aware that not everybody has the same, you know, mind and heart and intentions as I do. And some people just want to see somebody else get hurt. But I'm interested in why. Like, there's a lot of points for failure that are not necessarily built in, but that are anticipated. And I see all of the negative aspects that could happen and positive as both just kind of holding up a big mirror to who we are.
Right. Well, it's interesting. You alluded to this in some of the things you've already said, which is, I believe that there is a point of diminishing returns. You know, I've been around marketing and advertising and communications for a very long time, and still remember the world before the web, and which, believe it or not, was not that long ago.
No,
and
I'm old enough to remember it.
And and the sort of the brass ring has always been that, you know, the Googles of the world, even before there was a Google, are going to get you, company A, to your exact right customer. You know, we're gonna remove all the waste in your advertising, and we're gonna target people, and we're gonna bring them to you. But I also suspect that there's just volumes and volumes of data that, and you sort of indicated this, that are just tedious, that are just useless. At the end of the day, they don't care. You know, Macy's doesn't care what you do with 98.6% of your time.
No.
They care if you are interested in their sales on skirts or whatever. That's it.
They care about the why.
Yeah.
Like the hardest information to glean from people is the reasons why we do what we do. So what happened that made you want to go and buy this today?
Right. And I suspect that a lot of companies, if they are not already finding, will continue to find that very often the answer to that is an average that goes back to sort of traditional demographic logic, rather than, we can track Jennifer and we're going to get her at exactly the right moment.
Well, they'll also be able to, that's what they know. whether you're an impulse buyer, whether you like think about your purchases, and they already know that. That's quite, I find quite, many people might not even know that about themselves, so that's why they're trying to understand us almost better than we.
Right.
We
right.
take a look at ourselves, and I find that interesting.
It's interesting.
As you well also, as scary.
You also made me think of this when reality TV first became a thing.
Yeah.
And it was growing. My immediate prediction was that, you know, one day we would just be sitting on couches watching other people sitting on couches watching us back.
Yeah.
And that would be all the television eventually was. So
I think in Iceland they had, I don't know if they still do, but they had that. They had security cameras all over the city in Reykjavik.
Mm.
And people could just watch the security cameras on their on their televisions.
Yeah. Well, and that raises, you know, the question is whether or not, I mean, do you worry about this this venture becoming sort of purely voyeuristic and then sort of ebbing off, how to keep it interesting and lively beyond that. I mean, you know, well, voyeurism has its, it'll always attract a crowd, but not for very long.
Well, that's where I find that, I mean, it's not, I don't know if you're familiar with Jenny Cam.
I'm not.
So that was a girl in the 90s who, I didn't know about it before starting this project. And she set up a camera, a webcam, and she was just live. So this was the beginning of live casting.
Mm.
This camera all the time in her room. And I think she would get a million views whenever she ended up leaving it on when she would have sex. And so that's kind of a thing where you objectify yourself to such a point. And I'm not, as a company, that's where I have a bit of control. It's like, how much is orchestrated, how much is real, how much is what's valuable. And then when I understand what's valuable, does it go against my my personal beliefs or what I'm willing to do? Like, that's one of the limits. What am I willing to do for profit? And that's just for me to test. So I have my mission and my vision, and I have my you know, business plan that with my bylaws saying, like, this is what I believe in and what where at this starting point what I want to do. And then I'm interested in seeing, as companies do, how much that evolves and changes throughout the life of a company. And as more shareholders get involved, and maybe the more control that I lose, as, you know, I won't be the sole shareholder, does it get distilled to something that I'm not comfortable with? And so in a way, there's a control now to what I choose to show. But I'm also kind of starting at this, I'll show as much as I can until I kind of understand what the values are, until Dome is built more, the API and the app, so that I am not transparent. My information is not transparent anymore, and it's in my control. So it's serving as a few things. Like, one is a measure to progress. Another in what is valuable, like, so the voyeuristic aspect, what do I do that needs to be entertaining enough, and does it need to, like, what are the revenue streams of doing that, even online, of living online? And then in regards to what I'm actually comfortable with and putting that into, like, my corporate values, saying, weighing and the public good. Is this good for the public? Is this not good for the public? Because I think that's something that's being questioned as well. That it's not purely, I will not, completely objectify myself just for profit.
Mm-hmm.
So there's by being a corporation and running this as a business, and being a human with, you know, how I see the world and how I feel, I'll be able to judge a bit, I guess, and react to the voyeuristic nature or the exploitative nature, and to raise questions, I think,
right,
about these things.